Or a Black Widow spider.
Or a poison toad.
Or anything that might kill us.
Ryan grinned at his old friend. JB looked around the darkling land. They had parked the LAV near the top of a ridge, among a clump of feathery tamarisks. The dying northerly was carrying the faint scent of a wood fire, elusive, untraceable. Both men knew well enough that a smell like that could easily have insinuated itself for 20 miles or more across the uninterrupted desert.
You're enjoying this, Ryan.
Yeah, it's like the early times.
You believe we'll find him, don't you?
Yeah, I do. What about you?
I guess for most of the time, I never believed the old man was still alive. The rad cancer, or whatever it was, that used to grip at his guts like a nest of red ants, seemed like it would chill him in the end. Then the way you finally walked out on us without...
Time will tell. Don't forget what Trader used to say about trying to guess what the future might bring.
What?
Save your brain. He said it was as useless as trying to hold a conversation with a dead sticky.
Ryan felt exhausted. In the old days, he'd been used to traveling for endless miles in one of the huge war wags, surrounded by the highly trained crews of the twin vehicles. He'd been used to the cramped quarters and the stink of sweat. Now it felt like all of the muscles in his body ached, and the marrow of every bone had become jelly from the ceaseless vibration of the big wag. His spine had been compressed by the jolting, and his eye still didn't feel as though it had settled properly back in its socket. Even his voice sounded odd to his ears, grating and harsh. They had canned pork for their supper from a hog farm and processing outfit up close by the lakes, with some pickled cabbage. They'd washed it down with a couple of bottles of beer that Jack had dug out of his cellar for them. There was auxiliary lighting off the battery, but it gave only a feeble glow.
We got any more ammo for the MG?
No. Got spares of the 9mm for your blaster. That wasn't bad shooting in the street there.
Thanks.
Dawn start?
Before that.
Sure.
And that was about the extent of the conversation between Ryan and JB that evening inside the LAV-25 in northern New Mexico. Ryan dreamed of a world that he had never known. A world that vanished more than 50 years before he was born in the Shens. One that he only knew from the memories of the elderly and from fragile books and magazines. The world before the missiles blackened the skies and blighted the earth. He was riding on one of the steam wags that had crossed the country on iron rails. The coaches were luxurious, with padded seats and silken draperies. It was difficult to know where he was, as it was deepest night and the bright electric lamps reflected from the dark glass of the windows. There was nobody else in his compartment, though a table was laid for two people, with fine china and crystal glasses, but nothing there to eat or drink. From behind the walls, Ryan could hear the muted hum of conversation and the occasional laughter of other travelers. The train was moving fast, the wheels humming, the sound of it like whispered words. You can never go back. You can never go back. You can never go back. Ryan pressed his forehead against the cold glass, trying to make out some feature of the land beyond the coach, but it was blankly invisible. For a bizarre moment, he had the illusion that he could see a strange bird-like lizard, taller than a grown man, hopping alongside the train, its feather-crested head turned toward him.
Yeah?
A white-coated porter entered.
Your guest sent a message, Mr. Carter, that he has been delayed forever.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Enjoy the rest of your ride on the good old Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad.
The porter closed the door quietly, and Ryan was left alone again, rumbling on through the night. In the middle of the dream, Ryan fell asleep and dreamed a dream within a dream, though he couldn't remember what it had been about when he was jerked awake again, within the dream, in the luxurious train sleeper. For a moment, Ryan couldn't work out what it was that had awakened him. The lights had dimmed, and he could now see something of the countryside. They were moving at a little better than walking pace through a dense forest of forbidding conifers, so tall that Ryan couldn't make out their tops. Then he realized the traitor was outside the train, his head and shoulders level with the window of the compartment, moving steadily along and keeping up with it. He was smiling, his head turned toward Ryan, with a feathery crest of gray hair running down the center of his angular skull. Ryan blinked. Blinked both eyes. The train was gathering momentum, its acceleration pressing him back into the embroidered cushions of the seat. It was astounding the way the trader was able to keep up with it, matching it for speed, the old Armalite resting across his shoulders. He was still smiling, his face closer to the glass than before. Now Trader lifted his right hand and began to scratch on the window. Ryan noticed that the nails were hooked and as thick as horn, more like the claws of a big puma. They were leaving gouges on the glass. The smile was still there, but it had become deeply sinister and vulpine, the lips peeling back, revealing crooked teeth, jagged and yellow, poking from raw and bleeding gums. The train was moving faster now. Trader was floating effortlessly alongside the coach, nodding and beckoning to Ryan.
You can never go back, Ryan. You can never go back. Never go back. Back.
Terror held Ryan in thrall, paralyzed, unable to move a limb to escape from the prison of the compartment. The rest of the universe was a blur. Ryan couldn't turn his head away from the macabre specter that flowed with the train, now moving at unimaginable speed. So fast that the glass was beginning to melt, beads of it turning molten and starting to trickle toward the rear of the window. Trader's hand was pressed against it, the flesh blackening from the intense heat, smoldering and smoking. Tiny blue flames erupted from each curved claw, and the smile never wavered. It had become so hot in the compartment that Ryan was dripping with perspiration, feeling it trickle down into both his eyes, over his cheeks, across his stomach. It was only a matter of seconds before the glass, the only thing protecting him from the ghastly apparition, would totally disintegrate. One hand broke through and seized Ryan by the jaw, the broken nails digging into his flesh.
Dark night, Ryan. Can you stop that red blasted noise and let me get some sleep?
Ryan opened his eye, finding that he had rolled on his side, so that the bolt of the stire was digging into his jaw. The compartment of the LAV was warm, and he had been sweating.
Sorry, JB. Sorry.
The two men walked quietly through the early morning forest. It had been cold in the middle part of the night, and dew was dripping from the dark needles of the pines. The trail was soft with mulched leaves, making it easy to keep silent. At a turn in the track, they surprised a doe with a fawn, feeding from the tender shoots in the undergrowth. One of the men instinctively raised a weathered old Armalite rifle to his shoulder, then shook his head and lowered it again.
Might as well beat a drum to let the sons of bitches know we're coming.
The doe stared at the two human intruders with large, frightened eyes, then spun and darted off into the protection of the shadows, the little fawn following at her heels in a gawky, skipping leap. Abe's breath feathered out in front of him.
Your lucky day, young fella.
The Ville was a nameless collection of scattered huts around the sides of a bowl-shaped valley. A wide river flowed flatly through the settlement, with plum trout rising to the swarms of flies in the muddy hollows. The store was a converted church, though the weather had done most of the actual converting. Lightning had felled the top of the spire, and a quake had brought down the rear part of the tower. The small stained glass window, dedicated to a long-dead worthy, had disintegrated into dusty, colored splinters. A sign, protected by the porch, still proclaimed, "Today belongs to man, but forever belongs to the Almighty." There had been extensive logging in that part of the Cascades during the last few years before Skydark, and the woods were still veined from the faint remnants of the trails. One of them brought Trader and Abe out onto a shallow promontory, overlooking the ragtag ville. They stood together, concealed by the fringe of shadow, checking the place out.
"Man who rushes in is a man who gets himself carried out."
"True."
Abe's right hand rested on the butt of the big Colt Python strapped to his hip. His left hand was plucking nervously at his drooping mustache. On their previous visit, when they'd been given the pulque, there had been elements in the place that had made Abe feel distinctly uncomfortable. In the old times, with the two war wags, Abe recalled visiting hamlets in the dark backwoods of the Smokies and the Shens, blue-misted, triple-poor places. This place was reminiscent of those poverty shacks. During that visit, there'd been a boy, seeming close to 15, shuffling around the store with a broom. It had been several minutes before Abe had